Epilogue. The Prophet. A din of voices fills the grand hall of the Pillar of Radiance, echoing off the polished stone, while concourses of mage-folk gather in large groups. It's a business-like cacophony, replete with haughtiness and the noise of hundreds of slippered feet on marble. Many figures flow from the assortment of large fluted columns at the chamber's center, hurrying from one appointment to next in the corrupted heart of the kingdom. The prophet follows the blue-robed men and women in front of him, his disguised associates unassuming as they make their way to the lifts. His face, uncovered and unrecognized, takes in the full majesty of this place, the sights and the sounds that would fill ordinary men with a sense of awe. Above everything else, it makes him feel ill.
"Sinners and charlatans, all of them," he thinks as he passes through the bustling crowd. "They cling to their ways, sucking the life out of a city that lifted them up as gods."
A small smile graces the prophet's lips as a new thought strikes him.
"The time has come for a new sort of god. The sort that doesn't mire itself in sin and treasure."
The retinue passes through the chamber, blending in perfectly as they approach the lifts. One of the central columns, large compared to the others, rises before them like an obelisk, arcane symbols painted on its side.
"This is the lift to the circle,"
the bearded mage standing in front of the lift says, crossing his arms.
"Only authorized personnel are allowed access."
The man leading their group, a harbinger by the name of Salik, reaches into his stolen mage robes and retrieves a sealed letter. He hands it to the guard. The lift guard reads it, a surprised expression painting his bearded face. The script is a clever forgery penned in the hand of the High Magus herself. It's a flawless ruse, but even so, the prophet can't help but hold his breath as the mage reads it again. Everything hinges on them making it to the top of the tower. Finally, he hands it back to Salik and gives a slight shrug.
"Everything seems to be in order, Evoker,"
he says, stepping to the side.
"Remember to check in with the stewards before you meet with the circle."
With that, he grasps his talisman and places his other hand on the side of the column. The lift doors open, granting them access to its shadowed interior. One by one they shuffle inside, the doors closing behind them and radiant light shimmering beneath their feet. Anxious silence settles over them as the harbingers ascend, the magical platform bearing them to the tower's zenith. The prophet's hand strays to his side where Asmodeus's gift secretly rests.
"Soon," he thinks eagerly, forcing himself to take a deep, calming breath, "soon I'll be able to prove my worth and earn my place in history. The great day of judgment has come at last."
The lift slows, coming to a stop and depositing them on their desired floor. Fortunately, the way is clear, and no mages stand to bar their way. The golden-haired secretary is conspicuously absent, probably due to the generous bribe she'd been given the week before.
"The vain are far too easily manipulated by the lure of gold," the prophet muses, striding through the entryway. "Flash them a few coins, and they'll eagerly sell you their own mother."
They pass quickly into the wide hallway, going by offices and large windows offering views of the city. The sheer height of the Pillar of Radiance is enough to make a man lose his nerve, but the prophet's eyes remain forward, trained on the path ahead. An old mage woman steps out from one of the offices, eyes on an unfurled scroll in her gnarled hands. She glances up as they walk by, her surprise apparent on her ancient features.
"Excuse me, can I help you?"
They don't slow their pace, the infiltrators continuing their determined march down the hall.
A knife flashes as Salak passes the old woman, the blade cutting through her sapphire robes and piercing her heart. She drops without so much as a whimper, the scroll falling from her nerveless hands to lie beside her skeletal corpse. The retinue continues uninterrupted, the hallway turning inward to the center of the tower. There they discover a locked door, the iron-banded oak set into the polished stone. Stopping before the portal, the prophet wraps his knuckles in a distinct pattern, two soft knocks followed by three hard knocks. A few heartbeats later, the lock is disengaged from the other side. A mage opens the door and peers through the crack, his suspicious eyes lighting up when he sees them. "My prophet," he says, opening the door fully and beckoning them inside. "At last. Please hurry. We haven't much time." This room is small and circular, with a singular black and red pillar at its center. A body lies beside the lift, his mage robes stripped away and his neck bent at an odd angle. "They posted a guard here," the man explains as the group approaches the pillar. "I wasn't expecting him. Fortunately, he wasn't expecting me either." "You've done well," the prophet coos, stopping in front of the lift. "Now, if you'd do the honor of opening this contraption, we can be on our way. The time has come."
"As you wish, my lord."
The colluding mage strides forward and places his hand on the red and black mottled surface, using his stolen talisman to channel magic into the stone and conjure a door. Once inside, another platform materializes beneath their feet, the radiance bearing them upward at an undeterminable speed.
"This is it, my children," the prophet says intently as they reach the tower's pinnacle. "The moment each of us was born for. Our success today will ensure that each one of us will be granted paradise in the eternities. Strength to us all."
"Strength to us all,"
his children repeat, solemnly bowing their heads. The door slides open, revealing a massive chamber on the other side. Hovering in the air is a great crystal of the purest blue, its facets cracked in several places, and its glowing interior puttering like a dying fire. Even so, it shoots a constant beam through an oculus in the domed ceiling, the light feeding the blasphemous arc of radiance with the last magical vestiges of a forgotten age.
"The heart of light."
As a group, the Harbingers step onto the viewing platform, startling a handful of mages cloistered at the base of the heart with their instruments. An elderly, self-important man approaches them, a look of confusion on his gray-bearded face.
"What are you doing here?" he asks. "I don't recognize you."
"What is your name?" the prophet asks in turn, ignoring his question.
His frown deepens.
"Evoker Laramie."
"Laramie," the prophet repeats, smiling faintly. "You shall stand witness to a miracle today."
"A miracle?" the old man asks, confused. "The only miracle we're interested in is repairing the Ark. We're on the verge of something. A solution, I think. We requested additional resources from the artificers downstairs. Are you them?"
The prophet shakes his head, reaching within his cloak for the imbued dagger the Prince of Darkness had given him.
"We are here to do our master's will, you simple, naive mage. You cannot save that which is already lost."
With one smooth motion, he draws the green glowing weapon and plunges it into the mage's belly, the onyx blade sinking to the hilt and the emerald in the pommel flashing brightly. Laramie gasps, his knees wobbling as the dagger seems to drink from his very soul. His skin withers and turns to ash, his eyeballs shriveling and black smoke leaking from their sockets. Someone below calls out in alarm, and the Harbingers attack as one, pulling out weapons of their own. The prophet watches in amazement as the old mage crumples, his body reduced to little more than dust and bone.
"The power of the Ralar,"
he thinks, standing triumphantly over the pitiful remains. The power of the gods! Blue flames flash across the room as the mages clutch their talismans and utter words of power. But they are no warriors. The harbingers descend upon them like wolves, overwhelming them, tearing them apart with claws and teeth of steel. The prophet pays them little heed, striding past the body of ash and walking toward the giant floating crystal. Even from a distance he can tell that it's sick, diseased like the kingdom it protects. The conclave tried everything to heal it, to restore it to its former potency, but it wasn't enough. They failed. The time has now come to put this abomination out of its misery. Holding the prince's bloodless dagger in front of him, the prophet stares at his reflection in the glassy surface of the Heart of Light. Dark eyes stare back, set into a plain face of rough lines and sturdy features. A receding hairline of dark brown locks contrasts a week's growth of stubble on his cheeks, lips curling back in a grin of victory as he senses hunger emanating from the blade. The harbingers, having finished their bloody work, gather behind their leader in anticipation, their reflections joining his.
"Fear not, my children," the prophet says, raising the infernal weapon as if to strike. "When we awaken, we'll be crowned with glory. Our eternal treasures are already being prepared."
Nobody responds, and for a second it seems as if the entire world is holding its breath. Then he plunges the dagger into the heart, the crystal easily giving way before the magical blade. It cracks, splintering like shattered crockery, and emitting a high-pitched whine until suddenly it explodes, blasting them all back with enough heat to melt stone.